Well, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you and great to talk with you. We're so excited. I want to talk about tales of bravery and stupidity, but I have to ask you because, you know, it's on everybody's minds these days, and I thought you would be the guy who would know. Is Canada for sale, and what is the asking price?
Well, it's you can't afford it. It's over $2,000.
Oh, God,
It's
that's
like
wow.
it's yeah. And it's expensive, but no, it is true. I did a show in Washington recently, and the border guard told me there was a new rule. I have to be 25% funnier. That was my Kevin McDonald voice, in case you didn't know.
Man, I didn't realize the extent of these tariffs. Wow, it hits
And
everybody.
it's hard for me to be like, some nights I can be 3% funnier, but like 25, that's like a big ask.
That's a lot. I think that's again, unfair trade practices, I would say. Well, you've been on the road a lot recently with the show, and I know this show is one you've been doing for a while, and it certainly changes each time you do it. And so, do you notice regional differences in humor, what people laugh at, how they laugh?
A little bit, but for some reason, the people who are Kids in the Hall fans or are my fans, fanettes, if they're only sort of fans, they're kind of similar in sensibility. And I do think that there's themes in the show that people respond to in the same way, which is just like the weird world we're in and how we're all in this together and the weird things we do to make it through. But you're right, the show does change, and it's probably much different than last time I was in New York or Boston, where I was sort of doing it off Broadway. And yeah, I just change it, and eventually I'll change the title because I keep changing its component parts to suit me.
Did you have something, Carrie? It looks like you wanted to ask a question.
Well, yeah, no, I was just going to sort of comment on that. There is, along with sort of the audience reaction being the same, I find that when I find somebody that is a Kids in the Hall fan, there is a sensibility that sort of makes an immediate connection outside of enjoying Kids in the Hall. That the fans of that show and of you guys share a lot in common beyond just the Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, well, it is something, a good point. It's something that I realized not early in my career, is that it's like we are a kind of breed of person who, is a little bit cynical, a little bit hopeful. We look at the world in some weird way. We probably had some struggle with our parents in a certain kind of way, the sort of disappointment of lovers. We are a certain breed of people, and we connect on things that we don't even know about. That's why. It's like I always say in my show, outsiders, there sure are a lot of us. It does feel like, and now that we do fan expos and stuff, it's like meeting these people who go, my dad and I couldn't talk except we watched your show, and that was one thing we could communicate on or whatever. It's like when we were knocking it out and, exhausted with work way back doing the show, we didn't know what it was about. And sort of now, later, doing this la later lap in my career, meeting people in all these great cities, it's you kind of get to know it.
Yeah, you mentioned outsiders, and I wonder, even with the success you've had, do you still see the world as an outsider and as an observer of the rest of those people?
Yes, of course, there's always us and them. Them are the people that don't have worries and have good jobs, and why did they get that parking spot? And they're the people who are always trying to figure out. The world doesn't have to be the way it's been described, and we question things and we're trying to fit in. And I do think, having children who are 18 and 20 now, it's never been harder for to fit into the world. When I was that age, I just did whatever I wanted and thought it would be okay. But now there's such a thought about how complicated it is to find your place. So I do think that, in my 60s now, I feel just this kind of, I have more love for the world certainly than I did when I was an angry young man in my 20s. But I still feel like, I don't quite fit in.
We're talking with Bruce McCullough here on Downtown. Should I read Paul Meyer's book? It sounds like it's going to be great.
It's great. He's really good and he cares really well and he's kind of one of us. And maybe he could be harder on us. Who knows? I think the documentary on us was also that was on Netflix was also pretty good as well.
That was terrific. And you guys, yeah, you guys were pretty unsparing critics of yourselves, but I think that's always been the case with you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like we don't take anybody's inventory but our own. In all my stories, and I do a bunch of them in this show, the weird little man who's been drinking gin is me. The funny one is usually who made a fool of himself a little bit is me. It's not the people around me. And that's kind of, we've always marched with that without ever actually saying it, you know. And there's this hilarious thing now where, like, when we do the show, they wanted us, Netflix, to, like, make sure you say that you don't punch down. It's like, we don't use that term. We're people. We love people. We're not, you know. So, but that's kind of what we've always done, is, like, been a fan of the underdog.
I went back over the summer and rewatched the most recent season. And, boy, it was every bit as good, and I thought even better than I remembered it. You guys are at the top of your game doing what you do, whether it's your solo shows or when you got back together. And I think a big part of that is because you accept who you are and where you are at this point in life. You didn't try to do what you did 30 years ago.
Well, thank you for that. Like, I always, you know, always didn't want to be the guy, like, trying to do Bobby when I'm in my 60s and the gene pullers aren't quite working. No, we always tried to process our lives. You know, that's why I wrote 60 and on the pole, right?
So good.
And I think that's it. To be kind of honest with who you are in a way. And I think that's what leaving my show sometimes people really reverberates with them is, like, you know, I'm still here. We're all still here, which I love. We're all still kicking, but, you know, we still care, but it's, you know, it's just a different time.
And did I see that a few months back, y'all got back together and revisited the Rivoli?
We did the Rivoli. It was our 40th anniversary of performing at the Rivoli. And so we got to do some of the things. We did a few of the scenes that Amazon didn't want us to do. And then we did some of the scenes that, like, of each other's that we didn't want us to do, because we're just enjoying the idea of censorship. And that was really fun. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Hey, I wanted to bring this up, and because I've never asked you about it when you've been on with us, but I know we celebrated an anniversary last fall of what I think is an underrated movie, Superstar, and that dynamite cast of talented people you worked with, Molly, of course, and Will Ferrell, and even that Mark McKinney guy.
Yes, that rotten little Mark McKinney, that little question asker. Yeah, no, it's that's been a pretty sweet thing. And I screened it not too long ago with Molly and a bunch of weird ex-teenagers who are now, like, a goth in their 40s or something. And it's like, wow, what a weird little film that they let me make. So, yeah, I grow ever prouder of that, because it was made for a certain kind of awkward teenage girl that I don't think had a lot of stuff tailored to them.
And did I read correctly that it was the last on-screen appearance by Glynis Johns?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, she was a trip. I'd have to go in her trailer every day, and she'd say, "I can't eat until the director tells me it's time to eat." And I'd say, "Glynis, it's time for your toast. Oh, should I have tea too?" But that's like the old fashioned, like, English, like the director, what the director says. Should I be getting more sleep at night, Bruce? So yeah, that was a real trip.
And I wanted to bring up a movie that I love. Anybody who hasn't seen it, I always recommend it. It was so great. And you were fabulous as Carl Bernstein in Dick, which I think is just such a wonderful satire.
Yeah. And it has grown really well. Like, it's funny. Somebody once said that everything I touch turns to cult, but, you know, it's like, yeah, no, yeah. It doesn't make a lot of money the first time around, but you really enjoy it. And that, you know, I got to spend a week with Will Ferrell there and, you know, Michelle Williams, and it was fantastic.
Did you get invited to the SNL 50th anniversary festivities?
No, but Mark got to go. You know,
what the hell?
Yeah, well, that's Mark. He wants to go to the show. No, I had seen the show recently with my kids, which I really loved, because they're interested in it, and that was pretty sweet thing to do, the second show of the season. But, you know, I did films for them and I wrote for them, but I don't know if I really would class myself as one of the top 100 from SNL, and it was pretty wild to watch that show and see what they've accomplished, you know?
Well, your time there, was that kind of like the trial run to see if you guys could handle being in the big city, being in New York as opposed to Toronto?
Yeah, well, Lauren, because we had a following in Toronto, and Lauren took us, you know, once he wanted to do Kids in the Hall, to New York and to toughen us. But basically it was, there's no fans here. So you're going to be performing, you know, Caroline's by the Seaport in front of six people, and two of them are necking from work, you know. So it did toughen us and make us feel like vulnerable, which I think was not a bad thing as we made our kind of next move into what we were doing.
And then, of course, we talked about the success of Kids in the Hall and the notion that the network wanted to drop it. Was it after one season that they were ready to let it all go?
I think it was after every season, which we sort of quietly didn't know. And it's like, you know, I think we did get a call from Lauren and saying, oh, you know, I think it's dumb, you know. And, you know, Mark got an ACE award, a cable ACE award, which used to be a thing. And we just somehow, and it was kind of the old days a little bit. I think Lauren could make a call and go, you know, it's just getting good, and, you know, they know what they're doing, and there's Head Crusher, and it's catching on. Like, you could talk your way into another season, which I think he did. Like two or three times.
I think in the documentary, though, like, you guys weren't even sure the Cable ACE Awards were a real thing, right? That didn't click how big that was.
No, well, there's Joe Namath. Yeah, no, and of course for me, I have to say this, as an artist, I've never loved award shows. So I thought we were going there as a joke, and then I realized everyone was dancing and wanted to win. It's like, oh, we're not as punk as I'd hoped.
When you work on, whether it's the stand-up show you're doing now, anything you do, new episodes, where do you start? Do you start with a character and build from that and create scenarios for that character?
It can be. Like, I do it, it's different every time, you know, and I teach a course sometimes now on creative collaboration, and it's like we do different things. Like, you know, we write titles for sketches, and it's like, oh, and half of them, you know, Angie the HIV unicorn. I'm just looking at my board. Oh, what's that? Oh, what's super drunk? Well, we know what that is. And so sometimes it starts from a character or something you want to do or a voice you're doing. But I often start with kind of a title or an image of something. I once did a show for ABC called Carpoolers, which came from just the image of a guy's briefcase blowing all over the carpool lane, which is an abstract image, and it ended up being about guys who hang out together and stuff. But I like an image as well.
Does it get easier after you've done a character to come up with like the next script for that character? Because you know those recurring characters, or is that more of a process? Maybe the first idea is the easiest, and it becomes more difficult to you know come up with the next one.
Yeah, probably, and it's also like the guys never like it, right? You know, when Mark brings another Head Crusher into the read through, or I bring another. You know, Cabbage Head gets shot. It's like, oh, it's a little bit sweaty. And I did write at SNL the Year of the Liar. Yeah, that's the ticket. And I did write a few of those. And it's like, what's the liar doing this week? Is this? And it's sort of like a kind of a success that we don't like, especially the kids in the hall. It's like, oh, you already did that. Why are you doing it again? But of course, Scott is touring the nation with his brilliant Buddy Cole show right now. So sometimes they're super useful for saying things you want to say. Like, you know, to do a Kathy's again in this new series, you know, there's some characters that you just feel drawn to and that they still are there and are alive. And then there's others you just don't get around to doing, you know? But no, it can get harder, especially because you don't want to repeat your success because that would make you a hack. And very few of us
right.
Although you're a hack, it means you're working a lot, so maybe it's good.
When you meet the fans who I feel like every fan has been there almost since the beginning. Nobody came along late 90s and said, oh, I think I'll jump on board now. I feel like people have been there forever. What are you surprised by? Are there sketches? Are there characters? Are there moments that you've sort of put in the past and they'll say, oh, Bruce, I love that one?
Well, actually, the true answer is it's not that they say he's one of the Daves, you know, or my pen don't run off with my pen. It's that they have been, they're kind of their weird pseudo-sexual, who am I in the world souls have been touched by the five lost souls that are the kids in the hall. So it's kind of an emotional connection that isn't about this was my favorite one, if you know what I
Yeah,
mean.
absolutely. Hey, will there be some new music from you in the future?
I'm great question. It's like I should tee that up. I am in my office right now with my producing partner. We are writing a song called Maggie the Bomb Sniffing Dog. The Ballad of Maggie, and I am recording a record this May with Craig Northey, who's my longtime collaborator. So we've been doing that. And today we're also writing Sobriety's Made Me Boring and Grumpy and a Little Mean. So I'm quite excited about that.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. Can't wait for
Yeah,
that.
when I get my record, I'll come back on your show if you'll have me, and
You
I'll
know,
play it.
you
All
are
right.
always welcome here. And where are plans for the kids? I know are ephemeral at best. Have you guys talked? Do you have some ideas of what you might want to do, if anything?
Oh, we always talk. It's like getting five crazy chickens in one silk sack or something. We've done a couple things. You know, we're actually going to Anchorage, Alaska to do a fan expo next month. And so we'll sit down there and talk about what we should do next. But it's always in the air, and we always want to, you know, and it's hilarious because I'm doing a show. I'm in Brooklyn the same time and the same night as Kevin MacDonald is doing a show across town. It's like, couldn't you guys figure that out and just do a show together?
Now, we've had Kevin on, we've had Dave on, we've had no luck getting Scott or Mark. I don't, is it something I said?
Well, I think we can help you with Scott. I look over at our great creative partner there. He's out on the road with his show. I think he'll be anxious to sell any tickets he can, so I'm sure you can do that.
Tales of Bravery and Stupidity coming to New England, Somerville, Massachusetts, the Armory, Friday, April 11th at 7:30, Brooklyn, New York, at the Bell House, Saturday, April 12th at 7 o'clock. And then it's just a short drive from Maine to get to Anchorage, Alaska for Kids in the Hall at Arctic Comic Con, Anchorage, Alaska, Saturday, April 26th at 8 o'clock. And I'm told you can see Russia from there.
Yes, this seems like a Spinal Tap joke that I'm playing in Maine, and then in Alaska, you know, something.
Who planned that tour schedule?
Sometimes we just get weak and say yes, which is what we did with the Amazon show. So hopefully we'll do that a bit more in the future.
Well, I'm disappointed in some ways that you will not become our beloved 51st state. But if it goes the other way, and Canada looks to expand, I hope you would consider taking on Maine. We've been close for so long.
Yeah, we want Maine. We want Michigan. There's a couple other places we don't want, and I don't want to say them.
Oh, we don't
Yeah,
want them
Maine
either.
and Michigan would be great.
Right. Fantastic. Hey, Bruce, it is always great to talk with you. Appreciate you being with us today, and good luck out there on the road.
Yes, thank you, Rich. Anytime. Talk to you again.